He bound her to a signpost in the Nevada desert with zip ties and duct tape. But when she died, he said it was an unfortunate accident, a tragic side effect of their unusual relationship. But it turns out she also had a trust fund. This is the story of Jamie Fedden, the small and unsuspecting woman who died during what she thought was a bondage photo shoot. Hi friends, I'm Katie, and this is Katie Does Crime. Thank you for joining me for the first time if you're new here. I'm a Midwesterner who now lives in New York City, putting my writing degree to use by researching true crime cases that interest me, and hopefully you. And hello to the usual rapscallions and reprobates. Please consider subscribing or joining me on Patreon if you'd like to hear more true crime stories. In October 2019, an 8-year-old on a Nevada road trip with his family spotted something that didn't fit in with the sparse desert scenery. At first, he thought it was a dead animal, this body in the middle of nowhere in Lincoln County. It's one of the least populated places in Nevada, but it's famously the home of Area 51. That's the U.S. Air Force facility where many people think that the alien spacecraft that supposedly crashed in Roswell, New Mexico, was examined and stored. But this wasn't an alien body. It was a naked woman lying by a signpost in the desert. Her feet and hands were so small. And right next to her, on top of a rock, was a gold ring. She couldn't be identified at the time. The following month, a man was arrested in connection with a missing woman in Pennsylvania. This woman, 33-year-old Jamie Ray Fedden, was born on April 13, 1986. She always had a passion for medicine and loved people, so she had earned her associate's degree as an administrative medical assistant. She worked at a senior living facility where she enjoyed helping the residents. But she had last been seen 2 months before, on September 15, 2019, in Bethel Park, Pennsylvania, outside of Pittsburgh. The 4-foot-1-inch woman was already known in the area because she had once been interviewed by KDKA News about her struggles living with a rare condition that made her appear much younger than she was. Vader or Vodder syndrome affects embryos during pregnancy and causes the vertebrae, anus, heart, trachea, esophagus, kidneys, and limbs to form improperly. There's a kind of lighthearted video about it on YouTube from a woman who says,
"I was born without a butthole."
1 in 10 to 40,000 children will be affected by the condition, but symptoms can be mild, and no one knows what causes it. Jamie, along with being very small in stature, weighed only 75 pounds. People would often think she was a child and ask where her mom was. When she was interviewed by the news station, it was because she had been denied entry to a casino when she forgot her ID, and security didn't believe she was 29 years old.
"People don't believe me. They always say, 'You're not 29. In fact, I've had people come up to me on the street and say, "Where's your mom?"
Jamie was reported missing in November by a friend and her family, despite having a serious boyfriend who should have been interested in her disappearance. During a welfare check, the police found in her home a backpack containing what they called a kill kit: duct tape, zip ties, a fake CIA ID, and Jamie's phone. But no Jamie. One neighbor said she was a nice girl who just wanted to be friendly with people. But others said her relationship with her boyfriend was a tumultuous one, and they heard arguing coming from her townhouse. So the police picked up this boyfriend to interview him, and without much fanfare, he admitted that he had killed her, and that it had been planned. 39-year-old John Matthew Chapman, originally of Oakland, Maryland, told Jamie in September that they were driving to Las Vegas to vacation and possibly find a new home. While there, he took her into the desert 150 miles north of the city for what he said would be a bondage photo shoot. He bound her hands and feet with zip ties and then strapped her to a signpost. But instead of taking photos, he put duct tape over her mouth and nose to suffocate her. He watched her die. And then he took off the zip ties, the duct tape, and her clothes and left Jamie there. When that little boy spotted her the next month, she was less than a mile from the main highway, 25 or 30 yards off the side of a dirt road, like no one was even trying to hide her, but she was badly decomposed. Now, Pennsylvania police were talking to Jamie's boyfriend around the same time Nevada police were trying to identify her body. Local police spoke to her family, who said she had a volatile relationship with Chapman that caused them to worry when she seemed to go missing. She had sent them Facebook Messenger messages since her disappearance, but they believed he had written them. And they had seen him at her home without her, which seemed a little odd. John and Jamie seemed to have a long history because I found a post on her Facebook wall with photos that looked to include him in 2016. And it also seems like he had a history with her family because in January 2019, the same year Jamie died, she wrote a Facebook post that read, "Well, now it's gone too far. What my family is doing is about to have legal consequences because John is planning to go to the county courthouse on Monday and file stalking charges against the members of my family that won't stop their Yes, I looked it up, and what they are doing fits the definition of stalking." Apparently, Jamie's uncle had joined a dating site in order to catch Chapman on there looking for other women. It's a little sad that Jamie was mad at her uncle for his quote-unquote stalking, not her boyfriend for being on a dating site, although I know it's annoying when your family interferes in your dating life. So the police brought Chapman in for questioning about Jamie's disappearance. He confessed, and they called the Clark County Coroner's Office to see if they had an unidentified body. They did. Dental records and tattoos of family member names confirmed that the body was Jamie. And on Chapman's phone, in his deleted photos, was a picture of Jamie bound to that signpost. Chapman was arrested for kidnapping, criminal use of a communication facility, and obstructing administration of law. His family said he'd been married to a different woman for a year, and when they heard he was going to Las Vegas, they just thought it was for work. They said Chapman met Jamie at a school for special education students, and nothing seemed unusual. He had a lot of close friends. It must not have seemed weird to them that he often stayed at Jamie's house. Police say his only motivation for the trip was to murder Jamie for her money, but they weren't charging him with homicide yet because the body wasn't in their possession. Chapman was denied bond on November 19th at a hearing where he didn't show any emotion. His current wife, who was actually his fourth, said she had no idea he was leading this double life until she got a call from him at the Bethel Park police station. There on the phone, Chapman confessed to her that he killed someone. Suddenly, all of these times he visited family or traveled for work seemed so suspicious. It was one of those work trips that caused him to take her truck one day in September. He said he was first leaving their home to visit his aunt and uncle in Bethel Park, and then he would go on to Las Vegas. Now her truck was evidence and had been seized. He told his wife, "I killed her because I had to." Unlike a lot of wives who stick by their killer husbands, Chapman's current wife was only sympathetic to Jamie. She said, "He used Jamie so much. He just used her so much. I wasn't the true victim here. Jamie was. There are lots of other victims in this. I'm not by myself." Local news station WPXI interviewed Chapman's second ex-wife, a woman he met on early social media platform MySpace and was married to for 7 years. She said he lied to her about working for the FBI and CIA and wonders if this was even his first time murdering someone. When they were married, she says she found Ziploc baggies in their closet, individually labeled with women's names, containing pairs of women's underwear. She said Chapman dated other women while they were married, and the two actually moved in with Jamie before their divorce. But this woman, his wife, was told she had to pretend to be his sister. While they were there, he swindled Jamie out of every penny she had. His ex called Chapman a liar and a manipulator and says she thinks Jamie could have known something he didn't want her telling anyone. This second wife also said he had asked to take her younger sister to Vegas in the spring, which is, one, weird, and two, I don't know how old this woman's sister is, but it makes me wonder if Chapman had a thing for women who appeared too young for him, women like Jamie. His ex says their marriage ended when they were in Vegas themselves, and the feds knocked on their door to arrest Chapman for stealing Social Security numbers to commit tax fraud. He ended up going to prison for that.
I'm glad I got away from him when I did.
Did you ever fear that something would happen to Jamie?
No.
Was she, how did he describe her to you? Like a friend, a cousin, a sister?
A friend.
Were they romantically involved?
When me and John stayed with her, yes. And we briefly had an apartment in Johnstown. And he brought another female over and they were romantically involved.
So he had a lot of female friends.
Yeah.
Friends.
Uh-huh.
In December 2019, on his way into a preliminary hearing, Chapman told reporters that he was innocent and had only confessed because he was on medication. He said he didn't remember any of it. At that hearing, Jamie's best friend testified that her suspicions about something being wrong were confirmed when she texted Jamie that her uncle Ralph had died. Jamie texted that she wouldn't come to the funeral, saying, "I'm sorry to be distant, but the way everyone has treated me, I don't feel like part of the family anymore." But the thing was, Jamie didn't have an Uncle Ralph. Chapman was the one texting this friend. His lawyer argued that this wasn't kidnapping because Jamie went with Chapman willingly, but he was eventually charged with kidnapping resulting in death in Nevada, in addition to his kidnapping charge in Pennsylvania. The complaint against him said that he threw Jamie's clothes out of his truck on the way back to Pennsylvania and used her home as a place to meet his new girlfriend. He had searched for dump, body, and Nevada the night before he and Jamie arrived in Las Vegas. Chapman's case was put on hold because of COVID, like so many others, but he went to trial in Nevada in late April 2024. Jamie's neighbor testified that she never saw Jamie return home from her Vegas trip, but she did see Chapman coming and going from her townhouse. And one time he told her, "You won't be seeing much of Jamie anymore." But he acted like it was because she had gotten a new job and would be working long hours. The neighbor was suspicious enough that she texted Jamie with a made-up story about a red purse she'd borrowed, and the response let her know that her intuition was correct. I just love these clever friends and their fake texts that help catch this guy. This neighbor also reached out to one of Jamie's lifelong friends through Facebook for help. The friend testified that Jamie was tiny and trusting and had sent her photos from the road trip to Vegas with Chapman. She said Jamie truly loved him. But when Jamie texted that she wasn't coming back to Pennsylvania, her friend argued that she had a house and a job and pets there. Jamie's replies got angrier and angrier, and Jamie never cursed, so her friend knew something was up. This is when she made up the story about Jamie's Uncle Ralph and called the police for a welfare check. Jamie's aunt testified that Jamie's mom died of cancer when she was only 11, and Jamie had a trust fund that helped her with her housing and bills. It was only $200 per week, but apparently it was going straight into Chapman's bank account. She said Jamie had known Chapman for about 10 years, and he was the only boyfriend she'd ever had, but their relationship was on and off. Friends testified that Jamie was excited for her new life in Nevada with him, though, and she'd been saving up for the trip for a year, selling some of her things. The defense said their relationship was unique and that Jamie actually liked being tied up by Chapman regularly. They showed the jury photos of women bound and gagged, including at least one of Jamie. They also showed a photo of a rope inside Jamie's nightstand. They said Jamie consented to the desert photo shoot, and it was a sad accident when she died. But a police digital forensic examiner said that after Jamie died, someone made searches from her phone for pornographic images that weren't typical of her. I think the implication is that Chapman was trying to make it look like she was interested in that sort of thing when she wasn't. Chapman's family was in court to support him, but by this time, his latest wife had divorced him. She testified about Chapman's confession to her, and of course, there was that deleted picture of Jamie tied to the signpost on his phone and his taped confession to the police. After an 8-day trial, the jury found him guilty of kidnapping resulting in death. On August 2, 2024, Chapman was sentenced to life in prison. And I can't help but think that he was kind of an all-around gross guy. One source was able to find his Facebook page before it was scrubbed, and it didn't mention that he was married. He called himself a 39-year-old single guy at the time he murdered Jamie, which means he had recently updated it to reflect his age at the time, but didn't bother to mention that he had a wife and apparently multiple girlfriends. So it's not surprising to me that his exes were not only willing to speak out against him, but were so clearly on Jamie's side. His most recent ex-wife said Chapman's confession is the one thing he's ever said that she does believe. His second wife said she'd be watching his trial closely for Jamie. I do wonder, like this woman did, if Chapman had any victims before Jamie. It strikes me as quite the long con he was pulling with her for so little payoff. They'd been friends for 10 years, and one friend said Jamie had been saving up for this Vegas trip for a whole year. All so Chapman could get $200 a week from her. Because this was just the federal case, Chapman will still face trial at the state level, likely sometime in 2025. Jamie's obituary says she was resilient, kind, loving, and strong-willed, that spending time with her family and friends was her greatest joy. Neighbors say the world was a better place with Jamie in it, and she didn't deserve this.
What happened to her shouldn't happen to anyone, and particularly her, who couldn't defend herself.
Jamie Fedden lived across the street from Betsy Mueller in a quiet Bethel Park neighborhood.
The world was a better place with Jamie in it. She was very sweet.
The lead investigator on the case says Jamie had a fierceness and tenacity.
As a woman, I think that, you know, I recognize fierceness in other women, and Jamie had a fierceness about her. Our officers just, they listened to them, and they kept calling out, and, you know, everyone stayed up all night and just said, hey, we're going to keep listening until we can figure out what's going on here. This is a beyond horrible tragedy. I think anyone thinks, like, even when it's all over, how did this happen? There is one consistency through all of this. Everyone described her the same as loved people. It's a little stubborn and just tenacity like no other. So that's Jamie Fedden.
She reminds people that it was a welfare check that helped solve this case. Don't be afraid to look out for your neighbors and friends. Thank you for tuning into my podcast episode. I'm just a true crime fan like you are, and I really appreciate you taking a chance on me. Please subscribe and tell a friend if you like spending this time together. You can also find me on YouTube in the flesh by searching Katie Does Crime.